Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, from the Chronicles of the
Revolutionary Nerd. It's your host. Kelly McAlpine and Cynthia McDonald. We will be speaking with Mr. Andre Betts, who was raised on the west side of Detroit and born on May 4th, 1966. He always had a passion for comic books as he grew up in the 1970s. His favorites were Doctor Strange, the X-Men, the Avengers. He is a self-taught artist and writer, and he is also the founder and creator of Urban Style Comics. Mr. Andre Betts, what motivated you to create Urban Style Comics?
Well, growing up reading comic books as a kid, I always had a love for comics and, different shows on television back in the day, such as, Lost in Space, Twilight Zone. My favorite comics was, as you spoke on earlier, Doctor Strange, the Avengers, a few of the characters of the Avengers. Not enough black characters for the most part is what motivated me to get into creating my own comic books. Growing up, most of the characters, none looked like me. So when I got to the point where I started learning different things about myself and the culture, my culture, and learning a lot more about others, it made me reach out to start doing my own books. I was already drawing different characters out of other books, so I decided to do my own storylines at that point.
Okay, so when did you start doing your own storylines for your own comic books?
We started back in 1992, actually, when I started actually writing stories, to be honest, back in 92. Once I started writing the stories, I started creating my own characters, started drawing different characters, and, had to get a certain look for a certain character. It had to be like a radical type look that wasn't the same as most mainstream characters that we see out there. I decided to make a character, the original character, is Dreadlocks. That's my flagship character of the old Urban Style Comics universe. Once I created, Dreadlocks, created a group called Black Watch, and amongst other characters, and Dreadlocks is actually initially he was part of the Black Watch group, but I decided that I would go ahead and break him off from the group and do just a single character for a while, and get more publicity that way with the one character, make him look as radical as he does was appealing in itself, because people gravitated to his look due to the conscious element that was going on back in, the late 80s, I would say, with conscious hip-hop and, just different things going on that really helped me decide to go ahead and do the comics, Urban Style Comics, Dreadlocks, Black Watch, Jihad AD. These characters were very significant, as far as image is concerned and the story. And I felt the need to really do that. And back in 92 or 95, I actually went to a Million Man March or whatever back in 95, and I met a brother that was doing comics already. And I had a couple of his comics already. His name was David Sims at that time, but now his name is Dawood Anibuale. He does Brother Man. And I also met another brother by the name of Alfonso Washington, who did a story called Omega Man, Original Man. These stories motivated me a whole lot to start doing my own book. And when I talked to Brother Dawood, he was more or less saying that I should, you know, get into doing my thing since, you know, I was, you know, really into comics.
Mm-hmm. And we know that a lot of the comic book characters are based off of African mythology and ancient religions from ancient Kemet and other areas in Africa, such as West Africa, when related to the Voodoo, or as some people like to say, Voodoo or Yoruba. Are your characters, how are they related to African religion and culture and mythology?
Well, most of my characters are based off of the Kemetic mythology, Kemetic spirituality, more so than any of the other African spiritual systems previous to, you know, what we know today. Because back in the early 90s, late 80s, you know, I was studying under and within the All Seraphs Society, and I learned a lot as it related to Asar, Oset, Heru, all of these different mythological aspects of the Kemetic religion. And what I ended up doing was instilling a lot of that within the character Dreadlocks and some of the characters of Black Watch. When I did that, I figured, wow, this is something that's very powerful that actually needs to be out there. You look at, like, a lot of the stories that are out there now, you know, a lot of people don't know some of those stories stem from African mythologies or African stories and, you know, our folklores and things of that nature. It's just that we don't have the sense enough as a whole to reach within our own pot of gold to create the story. You know, you have some brothers out here that have done that, but it's not enough of them that have done it. You know, me, myself, you know, I'm going to do what I have to do to help educate and entertain at the same time. You know, I'm just not trying to create a comic book that's just a comic book per se. You know, I'm using it as a tool to, you know, to get at some of the youth or whatever, get them to understand that there's more to them more so than a Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, or any of the mainstream comic book characters. But most of my stories are based off Kemetic mythology with an urban twist, you know, because considering, you know, I don't live in Kemet, I have to give it that urban twist being from Detroit. You know, I have to put that in there so that way, you know, people can relate to it more so than it just being, excuse me, a preaching tool. You know, I have to add some superhero aspect to the characters so that it'd be entertaining for them. And then I add the mythology into it because it gives you the understanding of African spirituality as it relates to the Kemetic religion.
Okay. Can you tell us about Jihad AD?
Whoa, that's kind of tough right there. You know, that's kind of... Well, I can tell you a lot about it. You know, number one, it's not the term that people think it is. You know, I can tell you about the character himself. Actually, the character name is Johnny Lucas, which is named after my uncle, who had passed away several years ago. He's a character that went off to fight in the Desert Storm War. And in doing so, he witnessed certain things going on with his lieutenant or those that he served in the military as far as war crimes. So when he speaks out against the war crimes, of course, he has it out with his lieutenant, and he ends up being incarcerated. Once he's incarcerated, for maybe 10 years, you know, and when he gets out of prison or federal penitentiary, And when he gets out, you know, he's now facing, you know, the real world. As still as Johnny Lucas, and when he gets into the real world, he meets certain people. He meets a young lady that changes his way of thinking. He accepts Islam into his life then, which was in 2001. But what happens later is the World Trade bombing takes place. But an organization called, I call them the Council, what they do is create these, what I call a fantasy war, or not a fantasy war, but a fictitious war, a fictitious element, and have people thinking that certain powers that be are actually making things happen. But that's not actually the case, because everybody is paid for by the council. So what the council does is create a religious war as well as corporate war against, you know, all the Muslims or the different mosques at the time. And Lucas, he establishes his own, well, he does not establish anything on his own. What he does is he becomes a part of a mosque or whatever, and he becomes a part of society in the sense that he's married with kids. He has two kids, wife and everything. And what happens is the secret council, they send in their secret military, and they destroy the whole mosque as well as kill his family. But the thing is, he ends up being saved in the end by what I call the Moorish scientists. And no one knows about the Moorish scientists because they're underground, you know. I call it Moorish scientists because I base it off the Moorish Science Temple of America, you know, started by Noble Trevally some years ago. But needless to say, what he does is they cryogenically freeze Lucas, Johnny Lucas. They freeze him, and they go through, you know, giving him these different serums and creating him into being a super soldier, per se. And what happens is he ends up waking up in the year of 2166, which is a post-apocalyptic time period. And when he wakes up, you know, he has one of the scientists, a futuristic scientist, that's at his side. And he's like, you know, hey, wow, you're actually up. This actually worked. You actually exist. And then he was like, what's going on? You know, did they get to tussling a little bit? And he finds out that, you know, the world is basically scorched and torn apart, and it's no longer what it used to be, because now, you know, you have alien technology. You have some people controlling the water, controlling air. All the powers that be are in different provinces, and they're doing different things. And he's also dealing with artificial intelligence as well, because right now, one of the stories I'm working on now is related to artificial intelligence. And it's called The Cage, where he's in prison in there, and he has to basically fight his way out. But getting back to his origins, once he, you know, once the temple is invaded, meaning this more scientist temple is invaded, where they're actually doing all these experiments on him. You know, you have the futuristic army of the council now that are still in power. They just keep different aspects of them, you know, they just keep coming into power. And they invade this underground lab and basically kills his mentor, or the one who brought him to life from the cryogenic stage. And once that happens, you know, Jihad finds himself free from that, but he's out in the wilderness and doesn't know who he is. But then he reaches a province, and the people are calling him Jihad. They call him Jihad. He's wondering, why is everyone calling him Jihad or whatever? And they're calling him because of the things that he's doing or whatever is against what the establishment that they're a part of. It's against all that, and he's able to conquer these synthetic robots. or whatever, mm-hmm. and what it is. He takes on that name because this is what everybody's calling him, and the story that they've been told is someone from the past will come into the future and save them from everything that was holding them back and destroying the, you know, humanity. So that's how the origins of Lucas / Jahadi came into existence.
Okay. Sounds interesting. It seems like that is kind of, I could hear some historical points in there. Or when you mentioned that the council was going against the mob, it kind of reminds me of the crusade between the Christians and the Moors back in Spain in the 1700s. Very interesting. And plus, it also relates to how, even in today's world, how you have people of the Muslim faith is being terrorized and being ostracized by America. And, like, the example is, like, how the Syrians are coming into America, but a lot of the state's governors don't want to take them because they think that they may be a part of some sort of terrorist group. So that's very interesting.
Oh, go ahead. I'm listening to you.
Now, what is Black Watch? What is that based on?
The Black Watch is – Black Watch, I started – Black Watch because I had to have my own JLA / X-Men of my Urban Style Comics universe. When I created them, it was back during the time where, you know, X-Clan was very popular, which to me they're still popular to this day. And what I've done was based the name off of X-Clan's Black Watch, but I created characters because I thought the name was so sweet, and I just had to use it, you know, because I had so many different names I was going to use. And at the time, I was reading a comic called Stormwatch, you know, which was a book by Image Comics. I think it was Rob Liefeld. I can't really remember right offhand. But I thought it was an interesting book, so I figured I would create my own group called Black Watch. And once I created that, you know, it was on the pop, and that seems to be a lot of people's favorite book, to be honest. And what I did was added, like, six different characters with six different personalities. You know, we have Mizraim. We know which that's a Hebrew name for Egypt or Kemet. You know, we have Queen Nubia. We have Shiva, Third Eye. And we have Ragamuff. And I have a character as well named Nubian X as well. And each character, you know, they possess their own personalities, and they like to approach everything differently. And and it's kind of hard to write for a group, but I find it very exciting because of the fact that I can add in the different personalities of each character, especially the one, Mizraim, because that's like one of my favorites of the group. And I'm getting ready to work on the Queen Nubia book very soon. I'm working on getting an artist on board right now. I have one, actually, but he's working on another project right now. Once he's done, he'll be getting started on the Queen Nubia story. And actually, you know, what I'm looking at is it's a powerful story because anytime people see that, it's like they want it right away. It's like they're feeling it right away. I need to get this Black Watch, what's this about? I gotta have it, you know. And they're actually a group that's based in the future, and is beyond the time of dreadlocks, you know, because dreadlocks is based on more or less modern times, slightly 10 years ahead of this, you know, time period. But Black Watch is more or less thousands of years in advance, and they're like time travelers. And anything that dreadlocks couldn't handle or whatever, they basically could try and travel back into the time period of dreadlocks and help him out, like, on another angle, another end of the spectrum. And I actually did a book a few years ago, called, War of the Dreadlocks, War of the Gods. And I introduced Black Watch briefly in that book, and then eventually I did the actual book, Black Watch, to introduce them in their own book, because a lot of people were really interested in it. And, you know, it was powerful as well.
Okay. Now, when it comes to the self-esteem in the youth, entertainment, would you say that the images are very important for young African-American youth to see in television and in film, art, comic books, etc.?
Oh, yeah, it's very important. You know, I feel, you know, that's like I was getting, let's get back to what I was saying a little earlier. You know, when I was reading comic books left and right, you know, the different stories of, you know, Image, Marvel, DC, all the characters, even in that day of the 90s or whatever, were still predominantly, you know, white or whatever. So if we're constantly pushing this off to us or whatever, we're going to eventually see ourselves as that, nothing more. So I feel it's very important that we create characters that look like us. It's okay if you want to create another character that look like somebody else, that's cool. But for the most part, when you're black, African American, whatever you choose to call yourself or whatever, you need to really create characters that look like you and not try to, you know, really get into everybody else, because everybody else is already established. That's why some of us are doing books anyway, because we kind of following their path anyway. So we're going to follow their path. Why are we going to create characters that look like them and not like us?
Right.
They've stole more than enough from us, you know, to the point where, you know, we got to take it back. We can't, you know, just keep following them. And this is what happens when our youth are constantly seeing images of other people and not themselves in a certain position, because we're going to constantly be wanting to follow them and not do anything for ourselves.
Yeah, you're right. That's very true. That's very true. And plus, when people see that a person of African-American descent, black descent, whatever they would like to call themselves, it empowers them and it lets them know, like, hey, I can do this. Just like this person is doing it, I could do it too. Or I could do something else. I could be a film director, or I can be a fine artist, or a musician, or whatever. And I think that's very important. And what type of workshops do you have in the city? Do you teach people how to write their own stories? Do you teach people how to draw?
Well, as far as workshops, any form of a workshop that anyone would invite me to, or if they want me to be a part of one, I'm more than happy to be a part of one. But me, per se, as far as having one established, no. What I would do is recommend, there's some cats out of Detroit called Detroit Tradecraft. That's basically what they do. They run workshops. And they're teaching everything from, you know, drawing, basic drawing skills, all the way to animation. It's whatever time they can put in, but that's what they do for the most part. And if ever I'm invited to become a part of it and help, you know, teach someone or show them the way of art as well as writing, then I'm more than open to do that. Usually what I do, I have something set up for at the Motor City Black Age of Comics, where we try to have workshops there if time, you know, permits it. For the most part, you know, I don't have an actual setup or a lab for a workshop.
Okay. How long were you involved with the Motor City Black Age of Comics? How long were you involved with the Motor City Black Age of Comics?
I've been doing the Motor City Black Age of Comics for 8 years. Well, it's been 7 years since this past Black Age of Comics, maybe a few months ago. I'm working on Black Age number 8 now. And I basically started it based off the concept of some other brothers that were doing Black Ages in Philadelphia and in Chicago. Actually, it started from Philadelphia introducing me to it in a sense of me establishing a Black Age of Comics movement. In Chicago, it was started by a brother by the name of Churchill Only. He started the whole Black Age movement back in the early 90s. And ever since then, you know, I've been doing the Black Age for a while. And once I started it, you know, a lot of people... hello, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. A lot of people, they're really really taken by the Black Age of Comics movement, because when they come out, they actually get out and see all these different artists and creators doing their own thing. And we all come from different perspectives of art, as well as different perspectives of stories. You know, everyone's story is not the same. That's one good thing that I like about the Motor City Black Age of Comics, or any Black Age of Comics even, is all the artists are different and all their stories that they tell are totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You will not walk into a Motor City Black Age of Comics and find the same story on every table that you walk to.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been involved with it now for 7 years, and I'm working on year 8 right now. Well, not as hard, but, you know, I'll be putting it in the books real soon, where a lot of people will know about it, and eventually, you know, we'll get, you know, a crowd like we did this past September, you know, which it was unbelievable this past September. You know, I was just amazed by that, because, you know, the location had changed, and I was kind of leery about it, but, you know, at the same time, I knew that it was a place that was positive. You know, it was Burt's Warehouse. And
mm-hmm.
And I knew at Burt's that it could bring some people out just because of the name Burt's in itself. Everyone knows about it, and everyone, you know, just loves that area. So, you know, not only, you know, we had a lot of people come out that day, you know, of all persuasions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't just, you know, black people there. We had all persuasions. We had black, white, and I think we had
mm-hmm.
a few others there. I don't know. You know, it was just real crowded there, you know, and people were really receptive and happy to be there, all the vendors and all
mm-hmm.
all the patrons that came by. They really enjoyed themselves. You know, we had the live performance by Falau Cannon, Brother Cameron Reynolds
mm-hmm.
of Cam Comics. You know, we had Deron Love performing. We had Tony Dennis on the Wheels of Steel. But we were good that day. Had good food, good company.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't beat that show.
Sure couldn't. It was very entertaining, and I definitely learned a lot. That's for sure. Do you plan on being involved in other Comic Cons, or let's say, for instance, do you plan on being involved with YumaCon next year?
Well, YumaCon, I am interested in YumaCon. But YumaCon is geared more towards manga and anime.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any manga artists that I'm working with, per se, and I don't draw manga style myself. And most of the artists that I've met or I meet, they're still traditional artists and still writing traditional stories for the most part. So I would be interested in being there, but if I go there, will I lose or will I gain? That I don't know, because of the fact that everybody will be there for manga and anime.
Mm-hmm.
And me coming there with a traditional style, they may not be interested in that. But at
mm-hmm.
the same time, that's a chance that I will have to take, and I'm willing to take chances on YumaCon. But they have another event that they put on, and I think it's called
the Media Expo.
Midwest Media Expo. Now, I'm interested in participating in that because it's more comic book related, and it's more traditional comics related. And I think that would be the move to make for Urban Style Comics.
Okay. That sounds pretty good. That sounds awesome.
Can you repeat that again?
Excuse me. I can't hear
can you. Repeat that again?
I didn't say anything. Hold on for a second. It looks like Cynthia just called in. Cynthia, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Cynthia. How are you?
Hi, I've been here all this time. I just didn't say anything. I didn't want to interrupt the beautiful interview that was happening.
It's all good. It's all good. So how you doing?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm just really pumped up about what's going on here. You know, the Motor City Black Age blog radio first show, you know, right here. And we got a lot more to go, I'm sure, with other artists and creators getting on here in the near future.
Most definitely. I'm looking to speaking with others that are of like mind in the Afrocentric nerd comic of it all.
Right. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Oh, no, I had a question for you because I want to kind of piggyback on, you know, some of the other things that you guys were talking about earlier. So just like going over your website for Urban Style Comics and also, you know, just your bio, I noticed a word because, you know, I'm a big word person that you used, that you coined, called a new trend of Afrofuturism. Futurism. And
okay,
and me, a big sci-fi person, you know, that really, you know, caught my eye. Can you kind of expound on that and what exactly do you mean by that term and what it means and how you use it in what you create when you write and create your particular universe?
Well, I'll put it like this. I never coined the phrase Afrofuturism.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that you got black astro space, or you got blacks of the future. I like that aspect or whatever. But the term Afro in itself, you know, I never really bought into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it means blacks in science fiction.
Okay.
The term is a cool term. I have to take it back into, say, the 60s or something like that, you know, when the blacks were coining themselves or were the leaders, the Caucasians, were giving them their new names, you know, from mm-hmm. Negroes to Afro-American. You know, I have to throw Afro-American out there because, you know, to me it means it's a sweet term in the sense of it's gravitating, but does it mean anything?
Mm.
Does it have any basis behind it? I can't say it does because,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Brother Malcolm said years ago, you know, Afro, there's no land called Afro.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? But that's a new term that, you know, the new writers or the new creators are getting into. And even some of the older creators have bought into it. Most of my characters aren't science fiction in that sense. You know what I mean? But that's what it basically means, black science fiction, black sci-fi.
So I noticed you also, you know, mentioned a little time history. You're talking about the 60s and their term and you know, these different terms that were coined. And, you know, it's kind of funny how, like, you know, I would definitely say that black people in America faced the evolution between the 50s and the 60s and the 70s.
Right.
I almost liken it to, like, the 50s was kind of like a wake-up to the point where, you know, what's going on, we're not taking it anymore, and we're going to fight back. And the 60s were when they actually started putting even more of those things in action and actually seeing laws taking place to be more of a benefit for black people. And then you saw, like, a self-awareness happen most likely in the 70s. Like, when you hear the term more often used, black is beautiful, people start going back to their natural look and their hair, you know, even, like, started diving back into, like, well, even though we don't necessarily want to use the term Afro, but Afrocentric style of dressing, speaking, you know, even adopting more African-sounding names. And that's also when you started seeing more and more African-American comic book characters come about, like T'Challa from Black Panther, or even Misty Knight, or even Luke Cage. So, and then all of a sudden you're seeing, like, more of a resurgence of these characters today. So how would you say that influenced you when it came to even creating your universe of characters to bring more attention to black people in this particular vein as far as, like, comics is concerned?
Well, man, that's a really good question. I like that. The way they influenced me quite a bit, especially when you look at Luke Cage, the character Luke Cage, and even the Misty Knight in the sense of my character Queen Nubia. I think that their image was so powerful to me, you know, that those images had to just be done over and over again. You know, you can't do away with those images, you know, with the afros, and even in some cases, the way they speak on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are some, you know, some powerful images, and that's one of the reasons why, like with dreadlocks, when I created dreadlocks, that's why I put, you know, made him with the actual locks, and I gave him the background of the comedic philosophy, and I also placed him in the urban area of Detroit, not in the burbs, anything like that, you know, because I felt it was very important to do so, because most of us, you know, we tend to think that, you know, the suburbs or whatever, where all creativity come from, in a sense that we got peace and quiet and we're good. But I got peace and quiet over here where I stay, and I'm in the city. And those images, I got all of Luke. I still got all of Luke Cage books, Hero for Hire, and Luke Cage Power Man from back in the day. It's still in plastic. So they played a lot because of the structure of the political unrest during that time,
right,
which we still have in today's time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was easy for me to create, you know, dreadlocks due to the fact that, you know, we're going to always have this political unrest because of the fact that, you know, once again, this system was not set up and created for us.
Right.
Therefore, we have to look up to the images that's created for us and build on those images and either take them to the next level, or you can keep them at the same level till people finally identify to what's really going on and what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very positive for the young black youth out here.
So what do you think about now that Marvel is trying to reintroduce those characters in film? How do you really feel about that?
Well, I think it's a great idea that they're doing that. I think I really appreciate that they're doing that, that they're introducing them on film, whether it's on Netflix or even the big screen. I love the idea of them doing that because, it's a lot of us that are going to see Marvel movies. A lot of us still buying Marvel comic books, DC comic books. And we need to see those images on the big screen or the smaller screen being Netflix. I appreciate that. Now, the one thing that I don't really buy into, I'm going to throw this out there, it's kind of online. I don't buy into them changing the colors of the different characters. It's always been, Caucasian, white,
Like
like
John
Nick Fury.
into the black, like Sam Jackson,
Right.
and also when they did the remake of the Fantastic Four, making
Correct. Now,
who's
I'm not
the
a pre
African
I'm
American.
I right, because I'm not into that because I feel that if you're really sincere about black characters being on a big screen and all that, create a movie about Icon, do him. He's a cheap character, but he's black. Make him into a movie. Then, I'm good with that because they're not going to change his image. Whereas all of these characters, they're turning them black. I'm not, in love with that thought. But you got a lot of brothers out here that, that think that's a good idea. But I don't see what we actually gain from that. That's almost, that's, to be honest, that's almost saying that, that we came from them. I hate to throw it out there like that, but also Cradle of Civilization is over there in Africa. We know everything come from black, the Africans. So that's almost saying that we're coming from them. And sad part about it is some of our people may actually start thinking that in the future once they see a lot of that going on.
I agree.
That's
I definitely agree. So I have another question for you, Andre. Because like how we met is basically we're fellow creators, and I'm
Right.
really curious on your process when you write, like when you're creating a character, how you create their what they're going to be, what their universe is going to be, kind of like what their dialogue would be, their personality. What really like inspires you when you're creating particular characters like dreadlocks, or even when you created the Black Watch characters?
Well, in creating Dreadlocks, my flagship character, and creating him, I use a lot of my own personality to add into the character. It made it kind of easy to write him. And in writing for the characters of Black Watch, you deal with certain people in life, whether they're your friends, your cousins, or whoever they may be, and you can kind of develop storylines based off of their personalities. Because I have some funny cousins and I have some crazy cousins. I got all kind of people that are around me. I can easily develop storylines just off of their personalities and just add a few things here and there to the characters.
So
And it
you're
makes it
basically
easy.
writing off of basically going to a family.
Yeah, you go to a family or a friend and it's something about that person that you like that's really appealing. Makes it, real. It makes it fun to write at that point. And then some of your family members, they'll even come up to you and say, "Hey, is this supposed to be me?"
And you say,
Some of them I say, "Yeah." Some I say, "No, not really." Then they'll read more into it and be like, "Wait a minute, but this right here seems familiar." But that's basically how I write for the most part, based that I may have read up on, and that's basically it. That's what I do.
Cool. So what's so one of the things I also saw that you had available was a dreadlocks animated movie.
Yes, I have a dreadlocks animated movie I did about 2 years ago. I introduced it actually a little over a year and a half ago. I had a screening right here in Detroit at the, I think it was the 4th or 5th Motor City Black Age of Comics. The screening was wonderful. A lot of people came out. You know, I got rave reviews from the people that came out. And I had gotten, you know, negative reviews from the people that didn't come out, meaning the people who didn't actually see the animated movie, but they had a lot to say about it through the grapevine, about, you know, certain people talking really, really negative about it. Then I also had more people that really loved it. Mm. And I made a post on Facebook not too long ago, you know, wow, 3 years later, and I still haven't heard anything from the naysayers as far as their own animated movie.
Ah.
I haven't heard anything yet. I haven't even heard any productions or anything going on as it relates to that. And they basically haven't caught up to me, I should say.
Ain't it always the case?
It always seems that way. People always have a lot to say and don't have nothing to show for it. And I always think what they can do is better. That's really one of the main things that's wrong with our people, is that right there.
Mm-hmm.
That hating on the next person or next man, whatever. Just do your own thing and be happy with and see where you can go with it. But we have a lot of that going on.
Well, that's one definitely thing that I always say that we can learn from other cultures, is that when you – okay, so – for instance, East Indians, when they will come to this country, they will establish themselves, bring over their relatives, their friends, all build together. They build their own businesses together. They build their neighborhoods together. You know, no one goes lacking. However, you know, you find in our community that oftentimes, if we see one person go up, like, you know, come up, then, you know, we have a tendency to kind of point the finger at them, oh, like, ain't nobody, or they're not going to, you know, have that much success, or I can do better, or, you know, something to that effect. And I think that definitely causes schisms in our own neighborhoods, in our own, you know, culture, because, you know, we don't necessarily learn how to celebrate each other. But I hope that changes. I definitely.
That's one of the reasons I created the Motor City Black Age of Comics, the Detroit Premier Black Age movement right here in Detroit. I created that so that we could be celebrated by, you know, different, you know, people out here that have never seen black comic book characters or seen, you know, young brothers or brothers doing it, period. Like we're doing it. You know, I celebrate all the brothers. As long as, you know, they're doing something like that, I'm good with it. You know, and I'm happy for them. And that's why I created this venue, because if you go to the comic book conventions such as the Motor City Comic Con or C2E2, New York Comic Con, all these different Comic Cons, they're cool. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But we're only representing like a small freckle, small speck of pepper within a big bottle of salt.
Yeah, I agree.
That means you're rarely seen in there. So that's one reason. So everyone can be happy with seeing.
I would agree with you on that. Even I, you know, can tell. Like I've been to WizardCon here in Chicago, C2E2, even, you know, went to DragonCon in Atlanta, and I can count on one hand in those entire, and you know how big those spaces can be, that these are usually like in convention centers and or they take over hotels. And these are like huge, huge conventions. And you can barely see a representation of any like African-American creator, barely.
Right.
You know?
And when you do see this, you most of the time, maybe for a while, people like, you know, and it's really sad when you see a lot of people that look like you walk right by you as well. And
mm-hmm.
I've noticed at some of the Comic-Cons that, like, if there's other people at my booth, whether they're, you know, white or Hispanic, I noticed
mm-hmm.
then that a lot of brothers, they start walking up to the booth then.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not there, you know, like supporting or being curious, the brothers don't show up. They walk right by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them and a lot of them won't. And that's really, you know, annoying to see your own just walking by.
Right. But I do appreciate even being at Motor City Black Age of Comics that creators and passerbys were really coming up and engaging and creating and supporting each other.
Right, and that's what we look forward to. You know, when we do these shows, that's what we look forward to. You don't want to be at a show and no one is even coming up to you or saying anything to you.
Right. Right.
Looks like we only got 3 minutes left on it.
Yep, about 4 minutes left.
Like we have a caller on the line here. 313-647-1569. I want to know if this person want to chime in on the conversation. Let's see. Call,
hi, Duke. Good evening. Yes, I am.
Hi. How are you?
I am great, and just want to say it's a pleasure to hear you speak. I became acquainted with you through Miss Kelly at L. Calpine, and she, you know, just began talking about, you know, there's this really great artist who's doing some amazing things in the arena of superheroes and comics. I'm not an artist at all, but I was just fascinated by what I was hearing. And I just wanted to say thank you. I was born 1963, and I know for certain that had I had those images before me who looked like me, I know my self-esteem would have been through the roof. So I'm just so glad that you are doing the work that you are, and the young lady on the line as well. Just know that you are appreciated more than you know, and your work is really spiritual, whether you know it or not, because you are awakening that genie in our, not only our young people, I'm excited. And I'm originally from Detroit. I now live in Jacksonville, Florida, and I intend to be at the next expo next September. So I just want to congratulate you and encourage
you to
keep producing. Just love it. It's just wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you a lot. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Now we're getting to the last 50 seconds. So
okay.
I guess we'll
okay.
return to this conversation again in a few weeks. This is the Motor City Black Age of Comics Blog Talk Radio signing out. Catch you all later. Anybody else got something to say? 30
yes.
seconds.
Okay, on December 11th, our guest will be Abdul Haq of Crescent Comics. Thanks for joining us for tonight's show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Mm-hmm.